Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, so we are back for episode 14 of Digital Divination. Man,
it's
it's kind of, I'm thinking about where's the time been going here, because we're locked up, you know, pretty much with this pandemic where everybody's kind of social distancing. Yet, you know, so that kind of makes things drag, but at the same time, you know, we're in this weird time warp because everything's like the same.
Yeah, it's like Blursday, March 260th or something like that.
Yes. You know, I mean, I guess for me, it's a little different because when fall started, you know, I started teaching again because I had recovered enough. And so that's actually keeping me quite busy, but it's a different kind of teaching because now I'm teaching everything online and I'm just shocked at how much work that is compared to teaching in the classroom.
Wow. Had you done much online teaching before?
Well, you know, I've taught every summer online, but I did it asynchronously, pretty much where I didn't do any Zoom calls and there's no expectation, you know, for it to be really interactive. The students just needed to knock out the class. So here's some assignments, here's a big project, I'll grade them. And, you know, people kind of, you know, and it was all compressed into 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it was a really busy 4 weeks. But for me, it was like, I just did a bunch of grading. But now, because of what happened spring term when we shifted over and then now into fall, it's like the students expect you to make things super interactive, even in the online environment. And so that's one part where it's busy for me. And then the other part is they're like really clueless on how to do a lot of stuff. So I find I'm spending a lot of time explaining technical things to them all the time, too.
Ah, yeah. Because this is just as new for them, frankly. So, yeah.
Right. But they did this. See, I didn't teach in the spring because of health reasons. And so I figured they'd have this all wired down. And, you know, and I'd be the new person. And I actually told them, you know, I'll be asking them for best practices, what they learned. And I got some tidbits. And, you know, what I found is, so I'm teaching a class with like freshmen and sophomores, and another class with juniors and seniors. And juniors and seniors are fine. They're just like, oh, yeah, that's fine. We can manage all this kind of stuff. They don't ask any questions. But with the freshmen and sophomores, they're like, we're just brand new to college and we expect everything to be explained to us at least six different times in three different ways. So, yeah. So it's just like, oh man, I didn't realize there was going to be this much hand holding, you know. I don't mind doing it in class, you know, face to face, because it gets over pretty quick and everybody gets to hear it. But now it's like individual hand holding because they all and so I've had to step back and say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to have these things that are like reviews to explain what we did last week and what we're doing this week. And everybody needs to come so that I don't answer the same question a million times.
So, because they just don't know. That was, you know, yeah. It reminds me, one of the things about teaching reminds me of a, I'm sure entirely fabricated statement that the second best swordsman in Italy once said, I would rather have to fight the best swordsman in Italy than the worst swordsman, because at least I know what the best swordsman is going to do. Mm-hmm. Instead of just being kind of wild and not having no clue and asking things every which way and so on. That's been an analogy to teaching I've heard.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. One of the things that, so I've been GMing a lot online lately and, you know, conventions and different things. And one of the things I very intentionally do is I pick the higher level games because I want to GM for players that kind of know what they're doing rather than having to re-explain everything all the time on top of explaining how to use Roll 20 and everything else. So that's right. Kind of a very selfish, I, you know, face to face, I don't mind explaining new stuff, but when I have to explain the basics of Roll 20 to people, that really kind of stops the whole game too.
I see what you mean. No, I like the opposite. Actually, I prefer people that are new coming into it, low level, because there's a lot of, kind of, I think, magic and fun in learning the game and seeing people make the connections, right? When they're like, oh, wait a minute, I aid this guy and he gets a better result because I've helped him, right? I mean, just even basic things like that, when they make the connection, they're like, oh, that's a way I can help, and the rules actually support it. I mean, that's seeing those aha moments is really satisfying for me. And to get people to be, all right, well, even in Roll 20, it's like, well, you know, you could click on the D20 and look and see that your modifier is plus 10. But hey, if you go click on your saving throw, just click on the name of it, it'll roll it with the bonus. And they'll be like, oh, aha, right? Now it makes so much more sense to me. I still get some of the thrill of having new players even doing that. And I kind of like it.
Only that simple. No, what I'm talking about, people thinking, oh yeah, you know, last minute, oh man, I had to run an errand really quick. I'm sorry, I am an hour late for the game. Can I still jump in? Or, you know, people coming in and saying, oh yeah, you know, I know you said we were supposed to be using the simple sheet and have it all ready to go and imported, but I didn't have time to do that. Can we do that now after everybody else showed up a half hour early and you're all ready to roll? And, you know, so it's not so much explaining certain things. It's like, so the more seasoned players know the expectations when you have a society game, basically, you know, so it's like when we were at Zulu's and we would play, you know, face to face, we get new people to show up and they'd be watching the stuff and we'd work them in and explain things. Now, one of the things I could do is I could actually take one of my seasoned players and say, hey, can you help this guy out? And we'll just kind of keep going along. With Roll 20, it's harder to do that because everybody's, you know, remotely doing stuff. And then if they don't know how to put their character in or, you know, things like that, that can be a real deal breaker. And I hate turning people away. I hate having, you know, if I got five players all ready to go and everything set up, I hate making them all stall. I had a game, it was probably not this weekend, but the previous weekend, where the guy showed up an hour late. And then we had all these Discord problems and stuff. Oh, man. Like, where the channel just, two of my players just could not talk or hear anything. It took us a long time to figure that out. But the funny thing is, once it all got settled in, it was like one of the funnest games I've GM'd all year.
You know? It just took a little while to get settled. We've had some technical issues kind of plague us the last couple sessions of our Intrepid Heroes Dawn of Flame too. And we've been doing our best to roll with that, I know.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things that got me thinking about, I guess in general, about a topic for today is, you know, when we do our Intrepid Heroes, like if we have to cancel we had to cancel one of them because one of our players absolutely couldn't get online. And it's like everybody is so bummed because we really love this virtual interaction that our crew has, you know, having played together now for a couple years. And you know, I was also thinking that, you know, I can't remember the last time somebody actually missed one of our sessions. Everybody likes it so much. And you know, basically, now that we have this pandemic and we don't have a lot of social interactions where we can meet people face to face and do those sorts of fun things, you know, this ability to go online, I think, has really helped a lot, at least for me, you know, with my own kind of dealing with
the isolation, maybe.
Yeah, isolation, or, you know, it's not like I'm lonely, but it's more like, you know, oftentimes you kind of feel like, I need to just kind of be around other people. I need to interact. I need to do stuff for my own kind of mental health.
Right.
And what it really, you know, brings up for me is that in this pandemic, there are a lot of people dealing with pretty severe mental health issues. And I feel fortunate that I have several groups of friends online that I can turn to and not feel isolated, not feel all these sorts of issues.
Well, and I think that there's actually, it absolutely has been crushing for a lot of people. I mean, I think I probably would have said before this pandemic that I'm blessed to be on as much of an even keel as one can be from mental health issues, right? Mm-hmm. But even somebody who, you know, considers themselves to be as much of a rock as I do, I've had some real tough times struggling with this. So I really feel for people who have had difficulties interacting with people, or, you know, working from day to day and just kind of maybe not having enough spoons to get through the day even before all this, and the mm-hmm. toll that might have taken on them. To the extent there is any kind of blessing on that, I think that those people who have in the past had kind of either a rough time socializing, and they may have worked very hard to get up the energy to go to a local game day or an organized play game or a convention in order to sort of get some interaction with people. I know for a lot of people, that's a huge hurdle to prepare yourself to be in a public space, to open yourself up to talk to people. And I think the barrier is a little bit lower in gaming now, because so much gaming goes on online. Somebody who is, for example, finds a particularly tough time to get out of their house and prepare, you know, to go out in public and wonder what people are going to think about them. And that sort of they devote a lot of energy and effort into that. Maybe there's something, I hope, a little comforting about, well, I'm going to go and do this online play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. be able to slip into things a little bit easier, perhaps a little more anonymously. Certainly the ease of it is something that we've seen from the convention side for both PaizoCon and Gen Con. Just the number of players has just exploded in the games that we do. And that's been really neat to see. The number of people that have opportunities to attend who didn't before is great to see. And I hope that there is at least some subset of those people who maybe felt like they couldn't have done it before, that they didn't have sort of enough an ability to concentrate or enough confidence or something like that, who are like, yeah, now I can do it. And that, it makes me feel good to think that there is at least some subset of people who are getting into this in a way that they found very difficult before.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I almost wonder also if, like, kind of like this greater use of Discord that we see, you know, with kind of the online gaming, online environment, has enabled some people to get to know others and to network in a way that maybe they wouldn't have done it even if they had gone to a major convention. Because, you know, for some people, it could be very intimidating to walk up to a Ron Lundeen and say, hey, I really like your stuff. Could I talk to you about this or do this? And whereas, you know, with PaizoCon and Gen Con, you all had the Ask Me Anythings chat groups. And, you know, I know a bunch of those were really active with folks, and people really enjoyed that sort of thing.
That was a lot of fun for me to do. I don't know how often I would have been able to, example, talk about our chickens, right? In I don't know. I'd have worked them into conversation somehow, probably. But yeah, that they came up on the Ask Me Anything more than once. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, all that kind of taken together, I have been thinking a little bit about, you know, kind of mental health and self-care, you know, during the pandemic. You know, I, you know, like you, I feel like I'm fortunate to have been on a pretty even keel of late. But for me, for the most part, I was in, you know, a pretty dire situation for a long time. And good things happened to me during the pandemic in terms of my transplant. And then I had to isolate because of the transplant. And so now, because of the pandemic, I had all these things I could do. And so I didn't
in isolation.
Yeah. It's like, you know, normally I would have been, oh man, I can't see any of my friends. You know, they're all having fun at the game store and stuff like that. I can't go to these conventions. You know, I remember for PaizoCon, I actually, before they canceled it, I had to tell Tanya, yeah, I don't think I can GM because I'm either going to be recovering from my transplant or I'll be on dialysis. And then she said, okay, well, just let us know, whatever. You know, so I was really bummed I wasn't going to be able to go. And then when they canceled it and put it online, I said, oh, this is great. I can do it.
You were cheering, right? And I wonder how many other people were in that situation where they're like, man, I would love to go, but can't. And then as soon as it was digital rather than physical, like, oh, now I can, right? I'm sure you're not alone for somebody that sort of celebrated that announcement.
Well, there are a lot of people, you know, from overseas and, you know, who couldn't travel to the Seattle area. I saw a lot of that on the forums where people were really excited. And then afterwards, you know, just really happy with how well it went. And I think for the most part, you know, for the big conventions, you know, what Paizo did in terms of streaming panels and doing things like that, in addition to all the gameplay, you know, I thought was really pretty awesome.
Well, yeah, that's not uncharacteristic of Paizo. I'm really fortunate to be working there because they take employee mental health very seriously, and especially in this pandemic, they're very conservative about locking down the office and sending us to work from home very quickly. You know, almost to the point where I would have said it was too quickly in some cases, but at any rate, they do care very much about our safety and well-being and even our mental health. They had a, you know, we all attended a sort of a mental health workshop that they had for the employees, which was all about these topics. It was all about, you know, how to identify sort of self-care, how to identify, communications with other people that might be going in a slightly different way than you think. And this is a lot of what I felt like was some very basic stuff, but was important to hear in the, in sort of this new way of interacting with people, right? If you'd have told me ahead of time, hey, the way you phrase things matters on how somebody else receives it. And if they're feeling very worn out or stressed out, your intent in saying something to them doesn't matter as much to them as how they receive it. So pay attention to how what you say is received. It's a very short, very simple sort of statement, a good thing to keep in mind when you're interacting with anybody in any circumstance. But when everybody is remote and everything's online, you maybe have to pay even more attention to that. And being reminded that it's an important thing to keep track of is very valuable. So I think not only sort of how you're taking care of yourself, but how you're interacting with people in a way that is sort of good for everybody is a good thing to keep in mind. That's just one example of the ways that Paizo is sort of looking out for us, making sure we've got, you know, these sort of workshops that we can attend. I was really pleased very early on to have Paizo point out, say, hey, look, you've got sick days. You don't need to be sick physically in order to take these. If you need a mental health break, that's what sick days are for. And at the time I kind of scoffed. I'm like, yeah, I'll wait till I'm running a fever. But then a couple months later, I'm like, I feel like I kind of need to take a break. And my wife's the one that reminded me, like, didn't Paizo tell you that that's what sick days are for, is these sort of mental health breaks too? I'm like, yeah. And so I took a sick day to kind of decompress, and it went very well for me. I ended up being far more productive that week than I think I would have been. So it worked out well for me. It worked out well for the company. I mean, I'm glad to be a part of a company that keeps those things in mind.
Well, I seem to recall your wife saying how you had to be reminded to not be working so hard all the time. And not be staying up so late working and getting up so early working and doing stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I had actually, at the start of the pandemic, I dialed back, for other reasons, I dialed back my freelance workload pretty significantly. But then through the pandemic, I picked up a lot more freelance. And I'm now in a position where I'm kind of dialing it back again, and I'm not as actively looking for more freelance work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it comes and goes in cycles, and maybe the crest of the wave was cresting a little higher than I probably should have done, but I'm moving back towards the trough of a wave now. When you mentioned that this is our 14th Digital Divination episode, I was kind of excited at that number because I just turned in my 14th adventure path that I wrote. So hooray, number 14 is working very well for me
now this week. Haven't you also started working on 15? Is that, weren't you saying that as well?
The 15 what?
Weren't you starting on a 15th one as well?
I have not yet been formally assigned a 15th one. That may be coming. I certainly hope it's coming. I'm excited about what it might be, but no, I'm right now, I technically have only like 3 or 4 outstanding assignments, and that's very few for me.
Right. So, you know, I was thinking about, you know, now that we're doing so much remotely, how things have changed in terms of, you know, my part, you know, organizing games online, prepping for games online, getting players and stuff like that. And then I thought also we'd kind of look on your side if you've done anything differently in terms of, you know, the writing and developing that happens, given that you know that in the near future a lot of these games are going to be online.
I should. No, not so far. I think that we have had kind of a gradual awakening around Paizo over the last several years, that even though Paizo really kind of started as a magazine publishing company, that the physical publication is becoming an increasingly smaller fraction of the way people play our games. Still a huge fraction, still absolutely worth doing the physical stuff. I don't see us getting away from physical production at all. But
I wasn't referring to that per se, but more when you're developing, when you're writing an AP, writing an adventure, knowing that there's going to be a lot of people possibly running this on, in an online environment rather than face to face. Does that change maybe how you frame, you know, the context of something, or how, what call out blocks maybe you use? Maybe you don't worry about stuff. Like, I'll give you an example. So for Starfinder Society, they've changed all the monster stat blocks, and they've put them all in the, an appendix at the end, similar to what I guess they do with Pathfinder 2nd Edition. I don't know.
Yep, that's correct. That's how they've done it in Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
Now, when you're if you're GMing face-to-face, that's really annoying, okay? Because that causes you either to make additional copies of your document, so you have them to stick in earlier, or you're flipping all the way to the back and all the way back, and, you know, going back and forth. With the online environment, it's not near an issue because typically, for me anyway, I program up all my monsters, and it's actually really nice to have them all in an appendix. So I say, okay, I just got to get all these monsters in the from the appendix, put them in, and I'm all set.
And then throw them all together. Now, where we put the monster stats is sort of an ongoing thing. In the adventure paths, we haven't made any changes on that. What I have been paying more attention to, knowing that online play is a thing, is art. Because I think that the art in the book is primarily for the reader to make the product sort of seem compelling when you read it. And now for the reader, that's the GM in an adventure path. So I want to have cool and exciting pieces of art that show off, oh, hey, this is, you know, this is the scene looking fun. You can describe it like this and make it sort of fun for your players. But I know that in an online play, it is substantially more likely that a GM will be showing the art directly to the players.
Right.
So I may have, and this is, let me use a very specific example. In a piece of art that I was going to order, I had thought about making it kind of an action scene in fighting this monster right before the players get to this kind of puzzle trap thing on the wall. But then I thought about it. I'm like, no, what I want to illustrate instead is this puzzle trap thing on the wall, because I know that GMs are going to be able to show the picture and tell them, hey, here's the thing that you see. Mm-hmm. And that actually is going to be a lot more useful and interesting for the players than whatever art I would have normally put in that situation. So there is a little bit of thinking about what's going to happen when this is run online. And that's not to say that somebody couldn't just turn the book around on a, you know, when they're playing around a table and peep that illustration over their GM screen in order to show people, oh, it looks like this. But that tends to be a little less common because GMs don't like to show the page that might have a stat block on it or some sort of header that says, you know, why the king poisoned the so-and-so, right? But I feel like there's less of that issue in online, and the online art can tell a better story to the players. So there's a slightly different audience. And I feel like to the extent I've made any changes, it's not sweeping things in presentation or topic, but little things like that, that are just trying to make it incrementally easier and more immersive to run.
Now, is that something, you know, developers are constantly thinking about when they're putting together, you know, a particular book or title, is how can I make this easier for the GM to run and for the players to appreciate?
Yeah, well, it's not only the developers, it's kind of everybody. I've had, you know, when we pass off the development, we pass it off to the editing team, and the editing team will come back with questions, and they'll be like, wait a minute, this person was a, you know, male, and this introduction, and then they're female here. What happened, right? Are they supposed to be two different people, or did you make a mistake? So they'll come up with sort of actual specific questions like that. But the editors will sometimes come back and say, hey, I see what you mean by XYZ here, but I think a GM might be a little bit confused by that. Is there some way we can make it clearer for the GM who's reading it is going to be running it for the players? Or this box text kind of points to this thing that maybe isn't as important. Could it be better for the players if the box text said ABC? I love commentary like that. It shows me that kind of all of us are thinking that way. Mm-hmm. And there are some, and there is some thinking that goes into it at sort of a meta level as well. The adventure path that I've just finished up my work on it's certainly not a newbie adventure path, but we know that it might be a good entry point. The Abominations Vault Mega Dungeon, it's built off of the same sort of some of the people and locations that are in our beginner box. So we know that it might be something that beginners are coming to our game to see. And so I've been a little more explicit about some things I might assume seasoned GMs know in mm-hmm. developing it. So there is a little bit of that comes in all the time, and it's something that all of us look at. And that's fun. That makes me think that we're all sort of on the same page of, all right, what's the experience going to be like for the end user?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's good to know. I'm working on this new project that I got assigned that you were doing on it as well. Mm-hmm. I was working on that over the weekend. And, one of the things I started thinking about is, as I'm making things, it's like, What would I, as a player, really like to see in this category? So I'm making a new category of things. And I came up, I said, man, I really wish I had these. And I thought, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a whole bunch of these things that I love. And it's a great idea because they don't exist anywhere on the game. And so I started getting really excited about all my parts. Because rather than, because like before with the Starship Operations Manual, they told me I had to make kind of these tier ships and they would kind of had to be like this. And then you have all these build points you're stuck with and stuff. I think, okay, that's interesting. And it's really hard for an individual player to get super excited about a particular Starship build, to be honest.
Right, right.
But now I'm making other stuff that will be useful. And it's like, no, I'm going to make everything. Everything is going to be like the coolest thing I can think of doing. And so it's a lot funner for me this go around because I'm thinking more like, not like a GM, not like, oh, what do I have to deliver? And, how many words it's got to be, whatever. It's like, what's the coolest thing I can think of? And now I'm finding like, oh, man, I got to edit these things down because they're too many words.
So much cool stuff. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I love like, that.
How can I fit
feeling.
All that in 75 words for the intro? That doesn't work.
Yeah. But keeping in mind the utility is something. I let me give you a very specific example that I came across doing some Starfinder writing very recently. I took a look at the Days spell, right? Zero level spell. And the Days spell says that you use it on a humanoid who is CR3 or less, and it makes them dazed. And then in parentheses, it says, along the lines of, this means they can't take any actions, but it doesn't lower their defenses, right? They mm-hmm. put that in parentheses. And my thinking at the time was, wait, dazed is a condition. It's a defined thing in the rules. It is absolutely clear what dazed is when you look at it on this page over here. Mm-hmm. Why on earth would they bother putting it into this spell? And then I realized, well, because it's a zero level spell, and it may be literally the first time a player ever sees the dazed condition. Oh, that could be super useful. And so that got me thinking about what's low level versus what's high level mm-hmm. and what's sort of low level, like maybe somebody's first experience with this particular rules element versus mm-hmm. somebody that's higher level, you can assume that it isn't. So something like, if you've got this complicated thing that makes you entangled plus then encumbered plus then you get the burning condition except it's acid instead of fire. I mean, there's tons of complication you can do. Well, that's just not right for something that is going to hit at first level of play, for example.
Right, right.
So keeping in mind the audience is part of that design. And that's sometimes hard for me because I feel like I want to have all of these complicated interactions. It doesn't matter the level. I want to put them all in it. No, Ron, deep breath.
Kind of like that critter we had to fight in our last Intrepid Heroes episode we recorded, right?
So many different immunities and defenses.
So complicated.
Yeah, it's like, what? Yeah.
What? So, and unlike most nice authors, you didn't put a whole bunch of things in there to help overcome those. We were on our own.
You're correct. I sort of counted on the players by this point. I mean, you're eighth level. You've been around the block, so you should know. I don't know that maybe I made too many assumptions in that regard, but I will say when we get to the when people get to the episode, they'll hear that I was pretty clear about, well, you could go this way, which does not look dangerous, or this other way, which does look dangerous, and you immediately went the dangerous way.
Right.
And so when you go the non-dangerous way and you come across things and think to yourself, oh, that would have helped us fight that monster. Don't blame me. Blame you.
Well, you know, and one of the things I was thinking of when we first encountered the monster and figured some stuff about it, I'm thinking, maybe this is one of those monsters we're supposed to avoid. Let's let Jill Kosti hit it and see what happens.
That's not safe because he's going to try to hit everything all the time.
Yeah, I know. But whether or not I should say, oh, I should run and we should run. Jill Kosti, we should run. So, yeah, you know, it's, I really enjoy that group a lot. You know, it's funny. When we couldn't play, we still, most of us hung around like for an hour plus and decided I'm playing another game, you know, start up a different game on a different night with that. And then this last week when we got through one episode, but we couldn't get the next one recorded, it's like, yeah, we all hung around for another hour and a half anyway.
So, yep. Just chatting about stuff.
You know, so that's it's really nice to have a social group that you knew face to face.
Yep.
That you can then, you know, talk to online, and you're not, you know, when I'm doing a convention, I'm always really thankful when I get a player that I've played with before, because it's kind of neat to have a little bit of commonality with that person. And, you know, we can joke around, oh yeah, remember we did this and stuff, but you know, oftentimes I get all brand new people. And, but then maybe in the future, then they look for me again. I don't know what's happening.
And then they become one of the people. Yes. Yeah. I do have to say, for the online play that I've been doing, a lot of it has been with people that I've known or that I knew years ago. And, you know, that I'm able to, you know, somebody in Maryland or in Michigan or in Portland, right, that I haven't been able to see in years. But it's nice. I think we're all sort of slowly waking up to the fact that, no, I can literally play with anybody anywhere. And it doesn't matter that this guy I used to game with now moved to Florida. We can be in the same game together and, you know, be sort of still having the kind of fun like we used to have. And I think that's actually, getting back to the topic of mental health, I think that's actually an exceedingly healthy opportunity that we have to be able to interact with people that may have been very good for us a while back. It can be good for us again.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, the other thing I like is being on the West Coast, you know, we can play later with people in Central, East Coast, and UK and not have to stay up so late if we don't.
No, I'm going the other way on that one. I actually would prefer it were later, because when these people are like, you know, they're on the East Coast, they're like, oh, I want to get a game. I'm willing to wait till 8 o'clock to start my game. I'm like, well, that's 5 o'clock. I'm still working. I don't, I got my working day still. So
yeah, you're working too hard. Yeah. I go 7 to 4. If it's after 4, I'm good. So. Oh man. Well,
alrighty.
We don't have any questions for this week. I posted, you know, some requests to some of our users and patrons, and I didn't get anything.
Well, this is probably worth then pointing out that this is the kind of reason, this is the very reason to become a patron and ask questions, because you know we'll get to them.
Yes. If you're one of the few people that asks us questions, we will answer them. Yes. And we'll talk about you by name and thank you, you know, profusely. Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's always nice when somebody, you know, has something that they you know, would like to know about or get an opinion on or whatever it is. And, you know, what I find is that there's actually quite a bit of that for the Pathfinder folks. But I think just the sheer number of Starfinder players is a little bit less.
Right.
This is kind of my right. take on it. And so maybe the interest on that. And a lot of the folks that do Starfinder seem to be, you know, start from the beginning and like everybody knows about the same as everybody else because we've all been playing the same 3 years. So,
yeah.
Or I guess 2.5 years at this point. So.
Well, and there's something to be said for the fact that Pathfinder 2nd Edition is kind of the shiny new thing, and it's getting a lot of attention, yeah. a lot of questions. But I think that the people that try Starfinder really like it. I'm really pleased with the fact that so many Starfinder players that I meet kind of love where it's been and where it's going. That's really neat for me to see as well.
Now, I've been really excited with the development. Like, you know, when I look at the number of APs that are out there, so I'm a super subscriber, so I get copies of everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, for a while I could keep up with these. I could have enough time to play them all. And it's like, I'm behind. There's APs that are like, all of them have all been printed and I haven't had a chance to play them yet. And now there's no one's coming out. There's like so much content. which is good. Cause you know, that when it first came out, one of the big issues we had is, us hardcore Starfinder players, we played all the content and there was no more. We were just right. like kind of waiting. I guess maybe we'll do some Pathfinder. I don't know. Kind of thing. And now there's like so much content on both sides. It's kind of cool. You know,
That's neat. Yeah. It's also useful if you're able, because you can pick and choose to get the kind of things that you like, right? Because you can be like, well, I want to play Starfinder, but you know, that kind of conspiracy gaming and, you know, yeah. who's who and people pretending to be other people just doesn't thrill me. All right. Well, if you never play the threefold conspiracy, that's fine. There's plenty yeah. of other stuff, plenty of other stories.
Yeah. Like the, what is it? What's Jason Tondra's one that he did?
The Fly Free or Die.
Yeah. Fly Free or Die. Yeah. It's like, oh man, that's what I really want to play. And it's like, but we got to finish Dawn of Flame first before we can jump. And then there's the Devastation arc. I really want to do that one. So it's like,
but also we get to keep that kind of rolling down, you know, rolling into the other players. I had another player reach out to me recently and said, my group's interested in playing Starfinder. We think Dawn of Flame might be kind of fun. Do you know anything about that? Oh, do I? and I was able to sort of sell it as the most overtly magical of right. the science fantasy stories that we tell. And man, this player, they were all over that once they heard that was the case. So that's really mm-hmm. thrilling to have sparked somebody else's interest in something that we're really enjoying.
Yeah, no, it's really nice having all the different flavors, you know, of the APs. And it really makes me wonder, like, you know, what are they going to do next? You know, kind of what's going to be the overarching, you know, genre of the next one?
Oh, I know. Wait, no, I'm not saying.
Well, yeah, I know. You can't say. You can't even tell me, which is very disappointed about. But, you know, when you can, that'd be nice. yeah. No, I, you know, pretty excited. You know, I'm looking at my bookshelf here, though, and I realize one of the downsides of this whole playing online thing is I have all these unopened Pawn collections, you know?
Oh, so. I know what you mean. I actually never used Pawns anyway. I never used them. I had a pretty good miniature collection, and I kind of yeah. liked the miniatures I had. So I didn't use the Pawns until maybe 2 years ago. And I had a ton of Pawns. And as soon as I made the decision, oh, maybe I can use these, it was nice because I had so many that now I've got Pawns for anything I might possibly want to use. And that's fun. Mm-hmm. So once you kind of start cracking open the Pawns, then you've got no end of them. And I mean, they're fun to organize. I don't know. Just sort of.
Oh, organizing them is tough because, you know, it's really great when they're in little packs and you pop them out. And then you get to find some way to store them in a way that you'll remember where you put them. Because, you know, you got literally thousands of these things now. and they're all the same size and shape.
So different sizes, different pictures, different types. And
yeah, and it's like, oh, man. So that's probably one of the nice things about the online plays. You don't have to buy pawns and pawn bases and keep them organized. You can do it all online. And for me, you know, I've been doing GMing a lot of Starfinder. I probably average 2 or 3 games a week now for GMing it, sometimes up to 5. And I don't have to do all my tables because there's some nice shared resources for organized play where other people have made tables that they'll share with you on Roll20 so that you can basically run somebody else's table.
And, well, but this has been kind of the John Godek way, right? I mean, even before the pandemic, you would have everything neatly organized. Like, all right, well, if I'm going to run 1-09, I know I need exactly this stuff. And if I'm going to run 1-010 or, you know, 1-10, I'm going to need exactly this stuff. You're just so prepared. You've impressed me a lot with your diligent preparedness, even before we got into the place where it's easier to keep this stuff together.
Right. But it's so much easier online now. I mean, that's the thing. And so, like, one of the things I have, all these file folders full of, because the scenarios, I've put them out and put them in these little sheet protectors and, you know, and have little bags of pawns with them and all this stuff. And now they're all ready to go with all the Chronicle sheets so that if last minute I had to run a game, I just grab the binder and I could run it. And well, now, you know, I have all these same kind of things, tables set up. It's like, so I can just last minute, just click on a new table and go with that. So it's actually even easier now. And I think it's going to be really nice going back to face-to-face, but the type of preparation that you have to do for that, I'm going to have to get used to that again. You know,
you'll get back to it. No problem.
Yeah, no, I think so. I wish we knew how long this was going to go.
Well, we make do with what we can until we know differently, I guess. That's this kind of mantra everybody's under. Having an end time would be very valuable for everybody, but keeping doing what's right as far as making sure that we're all safe and protected and not transmitting anything, that's what's going to get us there soonest.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I've been isolating pretty hard. We do go out and drive around a little bit and get takeout. And we do go for walks and stuff, but it's like, yeah, I'm still, you know, I noticed driving around town today, actually, there are quite a few places that had indoor seating and stuff now. And it's like, I can't do that. You know, it's going to be a long time before I can do that.
Yeah, we were the same. I took my family for a hike today. And that was kind of fun. We masked up for the hike. At least my wife and I did. The kids not so much. But we saw that a lot where parents would be masked up, but the kids would not. But my kids know to keep the distance for other people, and people were really good about stepping off to either side of the trail when people would pass. And then on the way home, we stopped to do carry out at a place. And I kind of looked around and I saw, for a minute, it struck me. I'm like, there are people sitting in here and eating. That feels weird. I couldn't do that.
I know, but remember, that's what we did all the time.
I know.
Yeah, but it's kind of, you know, like going by Starbucks, there's a line going around the corner from Starbucks, you know, on the drive through, and there's people sitting inside. I guess that. And so my wife had to look up, have we changed phases or something else? Because we look at the COVID numbers every day, you know, and kind of see that, yeah, you know, it's getting a little better here, but there's still a lot of new cases. And, you know, King County's not so bad, but it's still, so I don't know. I don't know how it is. It's like, we shall see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been good chatting with you, Ron.
All right. As always, great chatting with you.
Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.